So that got me really interested in this company and got me think of the long-term prospect in this company. Because it's not very often that you get to do something that is more social impact driven, that is agent business in Indonesia, at the same time also push the forefront of a technology in Singapore. Over the past 3 or 4 years, the company has evolved so much. The business model has evolved into more of a payment infrastructure company. Our infrastructure is actually serving some of the big names in Indonesia like Bibli, Break, Bukalapak, Freight. I always say that moving money shouldn't be that difficult. Whether is it facilitating transaction between rural to urban, whether is it from one country to another, or whether is it between fiat to Web3, for example, we are here for you and we are the company to help you facilitate the transaction.
Hi folks, welcome back to On Call with Insignia, where we go on call with leaders innovating the future of Southeast Asia's internet and digital economy, or as we like to call it, SEO innovation. I'm your host, Paolo Aquino. And we are back with a new guest on our show. New guest, but should be a familiar company to many of our longtime listeners. We've been able to really track and document their journey all the way back since our podcast started in 2020 with the CEO, co-founder, Hendra, all the way to when they evolved into what is now a regional fintech group through a merger and with Xfirst. And we got to talk to Tianwei as well, who is also a group deputy CEO now of FAZ, about different things from blockchain to the future of payments in the region. So we've really been able to talk to a lot of the leaders from this company as they're shaping the future of financial services in the region. And today we're with another leader from that organization. I have with me none other than Mark Hu. He is the business unit head for Payment and Agent Network in Indonesia. So that should give you guys a little bit of a clue of what we're going to be talking about today. But yeah, first things first, welcome Mark to the show. Great to have you on.
Thank you, Paolo. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, so I wanted to kick things off, maybe for our audience who are hearing about FAZ for the first time. Maybe you can just give a brief sort of introduction to our audience of FAZ, and then we'll move along.
FAZ, or some of you might know as either PayFAZ or Xfirst, actually started off as more of a agent network company in Indonesia. But along the way, we have evolved and diversified ourselves out of just doing agent business. We also have quite a sizable payment infrastructure business, including a subsidiary, TraceX, that is focusing on digital payment, cryptocurrency, on-ramp, off-ramp in Singapore as well. Yeah, happy to be here. Happy to be chatting with Paolo here.
Yeah, so we're going to definitely talk about that agent network that FAZ started out with, as well as the payment infrastructure, especially as it relates to Indonesia, the Indonesian market. But first things first, I wanted to know how you, Mark, got into this organization, this company, and why you decided to join this company at that point in your career. I think it's already been a few years, right? And have you gone through several roles within the organization?
Yeah, about 3 years ago. Yeah, it was actually quite an interesting journey. Before I joined FAZ, I was a management consultant for almost 10 years, having done all sorts of projects, worked in almost every country in Southeast Asia. Being a consultant, it almost felt like something was missing. Mm. We're always being seen as an outsider, no matter how hard we try to integrate, we provide recommendation, but we don't always get to see the implementation through. It's like what people say, always the coach and never the player.
Right.
And for someone like me, who is very achievement-driven, you want to see the impact and legacy of your work, it can be tough. So at that point of time, I thought to myself, enough of writing the plan. Let's try to actually execute the plan. That's when I decided to take the plunge and join the dark side, so to speak. As for how I ended up in FAZ, interesting story. It all started with an interview about 3 years ago. Yeah. And not just with anyone, but with Boss Ding Lan himself. Mm. At the point of time, I was interviewing for a portfolio operation role in Insignia. Mm. So as part of the interview process, he gave me an assignment to create an in-depth analysis for one of his portfolio company. So I went on to Crunchbase, looked up Insignia, what is the biggest investment? And I think 3 years ago, it was PayFAZ, right? At that point of time, I knew nothing about PayFAZ. So I did my thing, did a few days of desktop research, crunched some numbers, made quite a comprehensive 3-page strategy plan, and presented it to Ying Lan. He introduced me to the then PayFAZ Chief of Staff, Archie, and I was hired as the head of strategy for PayFAZ, and the rest is what people say is history.
So I'm curious to know, given how you joined FAZ, what were the first few months like within the company? And what do you think really has kept you this long within the organization, 3 years now, and doing all these different things for FAZ?
So when I first started doing research on PayFAZ and then joined for the first few months, my experience has predominantly on the agent network in Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was physically based in Singapore, I actually got the opportunity to interact with the Expos folks, Ken Wei, Victor, Samson, and this I started to realize that as a group, we don't only have the agent network business, we also have a Web3 blockchain on-ramp, off-ramp business going on in Singapore. This is where I started getting more involved in the Singapore side of business as well. So that got me really interested in this company and got me think of a long-term prospect in this company, because it's not very often that you get to do something that is more social impact driven, that is agent business in Indonesia, at the same time also push the forefront of a technology in Singapore.
Yeah, I think you were placed in that unique position of seeing the best of both worlds within a single company. And now you spoke about encountering PayFaz or learning about this company through the agent network, and now you're the head of that sort of business within FAS, the head of payments and agent network in Indonesia. How would you compare that journey going from you joined as head of strategy, then to head of people, then chief of staff, and your current role? How would you compare your own professional evolution within FAS to FAS's own evolution as a company in the last 3 years?
To describe my personality, right, I always call myself a fixer. I can't sit still. Or sometimes people can call me busybody. I naturally gravitate towards the biggest problem in the organization. So when I first started in FAS as a head of strategy, my focus was mainly on just handling the commercial due diligence on some of the digital banks that we either want to acquire, to partner with, or to invest in. But I soon realized as a company, we don't really have a consistent cadence or mechanism in monitoring and reporting our portfolio's performance. So one of the first things I did was that to create this kind of cadence, because as someone that's coming from more execution background, I believe execution equals to discipline and discipline equal to cadence. So if you can't run a good cadence, then you can't run good execution. That's why I was very particular about setting the weekly, monthly, or even daily cadence for my team. So I started creating all this regular cadence for the team, aligning the team towards a set of goals and a success matrix. I also started pulling together a different strategy personnel across a different organization. Then after about 1 year later, I found a successor for the strategy portfolio. So I handed the strategy portfolio over to him. Then after that, I realized that we were facing some number of issues with talent. We were not hiring, we were not developing the people fast enough. So I decided to jump into the people portfolio as well. So during that transformation, I almost uprooted the entire team and rehired 90% of the team. Same story, after 1.5 years later, I found a successor within the people organization. So I moved on to something else. Then the next thing that caught my interest was the Indonesian portfolio. I wouldn't say that it was struggling at that time, but the market dynamic was just changing so fast, both in terms of the digitalization of the Indonesian population as well as the competitive landscape. When PayFaz first started, we were dominating the warung segment, so to speak. But over the years, we became just another player. So I saw a lot of potentials in that part of the business. So I decided to deep dive into that part, right? That's how I ended up being the business unit head for the payment as well as the agent network in Indonesia. So reflecting back the fast evolution over the past 3 years, I would probably divide it into three phases. Phase one, when I was setting up the strategy and the people team, is what I call the professionalizing phase. The phase of transition from a bootstrap startup into a professional organization. So it's all about system, processes, cadence, etc., that kind of hygiene factors. So phase two is where we are at right now. It's what I call a consolidation phase. It's the part where we started to consciously aligning the different part of our organization, identifying what are some of the core strengths that we have in commonalities and create a competitive advantage for the group moving forward. That's what we are doing with all the agent business and SwitchX business now. Right. So looking ahead, the third phase stage that we'll move into what we call a expansion phase. Now that we have the license in place, we want to venture into more of a regional payment business. So who knows, maybe next year you'll see me focusing more for that part of the area next year.
With a new role and all of that. Quite interesting how you found different opportunities for FAS to mature even more as an organization. And I think some of the challenges that it has faced over the past 3 years are not uncommon to a lot of companies. And I think it's definitely part of the so-called growing pains of a startup. You mentioned about the changing market dynamics that has impacted FAS's agent network business. Maybe you can speak about those dynamics a little bit more, and how Indonesian fintech as an industry is shaping the way that you're approaching this business, this side of the business.
So before we go on to talk about the evolution, it's very important for us to understand the origin of agent network. Why agent network comes to exist, right? So historically, a vast majority of unbanked and underbanked in rural Indonesia do not have access to any form of digital financial services. However, in the past few years, with the emerging of digital banking as well as all the e-wallets, the hurdle of adoption for any kind of digital financial services has decreased quite significantly over the past couple of years. So as a company, we actually got our first bucket of gold from agent network, particularly the PPOB business where, you know, end user will hand over cash, rupiah to our agents, and our agent can make payment on their behalf. So this business model exists because the end users, our unbanked and underbanked population in tier 2, tier 3 region of Indonesia, they don't have any kind of a bank account or any form of an e-wallet. But the thing is, this has changed so significantly over the past couple of years. With the adoption of wallet like OVO, GoPay, Dana, etc., but we still see very strong demand, and the demand from PPOB is holding steady, but the growth from e-wallet top-up has been exponential. When the end user hand over to the cash to agent, they no longer want the agent to purchase on their behalf. They want the agent to help them top up the e-wallet, and the end user themselves can use the e-wallet to conduct the online payment, whether it's e-commerce or online shopping, etc., right? So that trend of converting cash to e-money has changed into a form where they just want to top out the e-wallet instead of making the purchase directly. And that still exists today because there's still quite a significant portion of workers, be it daily wages or part-time workers or monthly workers, they still receive some part, if not the entire part of the pay in cash. But the thing is, this is going to change when payrolls will be entirely in the form of either a bank payments or e-wallet top-up. When that day comes, what is our role in financial ecosystem? Can we continue to survive and thrive as only the agent network? That's why when I talk to the team, I'm always very adamant about we cannot rely solely on our agent network business. We need to evolve into a payment infrastructure business by continuously innovating. That's when the day comes when we no longer used to handle cash. We still play a very significant role in this financial ecosystem, and we still continue to create value for the society at large.
And I think that goes back to what you mentioned in the previous question about FAS being in its consolidation phase. And to that point, I wanted for you to share a little bit more about how I would say the payment infrastructure side of the business can really work together with the agent network, which is in some ways also a kind of infrastructure. So how do these sort of different types of infrastructures, how are they already coming together in terms of helping FAS really grow as a company?
I believe that you also spoke with Tin Wei in the earlier season, talking about how FAS as a company has built infrastructure to power digital asset transaction, right?
Yeah.
So this is also in parallel with what we are doing in FAS Agent as well. So the thing is that I feel that FAS as a company is often misunderstood. I think it's also a bit of a failure of our own success. The thing is, because of a legacy of PayFAS being a successful agent network, when people think about FAS, people will think of FAS as only an agent network company. But in reality, over the past 3 or 4 years, the company has evolved so much. The business model has evolved into more of a payment infrastructure company. It might not be known to many people. Our infrastructure is actually serving some of the big names in Indonesia like Bibli, Break, Bukalapak, Freight. We derive a lot more revenue from our B2B business than our agent network business. While people might think of agent network as our core product, but in my point of view, agent network is like a test bed for us. The way we think about our infrastructure is that if we can serve the agent network, our own agent network, which is one of the biggest agent network in Indonesia effectively, then we can serve any other company wealth, regardless whether you are agent network or any kind of business. When we talk about payment infrastructure, it's not just the fiat transaction, right? It also includes the digital assets such as cryptocurrency on-off ramp as well. And that is the kind of company that we want to build. Our tagline is financial access for all. Access is not just about unbanked and underbanked in rural Indonesia. It's also about lack of access to the Web3 world, for example. It's also about lack of payment options when you travel overseas. So what I believe is quite simple, right, is that I always say that moving money shouldn't be that difficult. Whether is it facilitating transaction between rural to urban, whether is it from one country to another, or whether is it between fiat to Web3, for example, we are here for you and we are the company to help you facilitate the transaction.
Yeah, I had a follow-up question in terms of where you see payments moving, and especially in this region, with a lot of payment services becoming a lot more commoditized and companies that previously just focused on payments, thinking about how else to expand their financial service mix and open up more services and all of that. How do you see that kind of momentum in terms of verticalization of or rebundling of fintech, as they call it, impacting the way the kind of infrastructure FAS is building?
That kind of extension, you can take two different forms, right? Whether is it vertically or whether is it horizontally. What we see in the market is that a lot of companies try to do this. I, think it's vertically, is that they're trying to focus on the same segment of our customer, and they are providing more and more value add to them. So for example, maybe I used to handle payment for our unbanked and underbanked. I want to go into digital banking. I want to go into savings, investment, etc. That's a vertical extension, right? But I guess the way we think about this is that our core has always been payment. We want to expand payment to as many customer segments as possible. I guess like that's what you call a horizontal extension, right? We believe in ecosystem. We believe in economies of scale. So the way we think about expanding this horizontally is to serve not just a customer within Indonesia, is to also the companies within Southeast Asia, and expand beyond that is to serve the company that is trying to enter into Southeast Asia. Take for example, there's a company either coming from China or coming from US. They want to have a local partnership. Instead of having to find partner in every single country, they can just come to us. And we have the ability to allow them access to all the Southeast Asia company. And this vertical, this horizontal extension is also including the Web3 world as well. So you don't only get access to the fiat transaction, you also get access to the Web3 world as well. And Web3 world is beyond the boundary of countries, right? So that's how we think about the extension. Most people are thinking about this vertically. We think of this more from a horizontal perspective by leveraging our core competitive strength, which is payment infrastructure.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this to you off record in a previous call, but it certainly reminds me of how like some e-commerce or commerce companies going into the region, they need to find some kind of logistics partner, 3PL partner, 4PL partner. And you guys are doing something similar, but in payments for anybody who needs sort of all their payments kind of functionality covered for different segments and different markets. Yeah, before we wrap up part one of our conversation, I wanted to go into our make or break corner, which is fast becoming my favorite corner that I've set up here in this show.
All the inside scope here.
Yeah, all the war stories started to come out.
All the war stories, yeah.
Yeah, you've had 3 years already in FAZ. What has been the biggest make or break moment of this journey so far that you can share with us?
Yeah, recounting back my experience over the past 3 years, I think the tech boom back in 2021 and 2022 was definitely a very big moment for us. Might not be known to many people because it's more of an internal struggle, right? There was a time when you hear so many startups receiving huge funding, going IPOs, making huge purchases and acquisition. But as a company, we did not catch on that tech boom. So I think our DNA are built a little bit differently compared to other VC-funded startups. As a company, we fundamentally don't believe in a growth at all cost model. So we prioritize sustainable growth. When you talk about Hendra's famous quote, he always tells us that you need to treat the investor money like your mother's money. So if you think about capital like this, will you still spend it? Will you still burn it the same way? So as a company, we don't believe in vanity metrics. We don't believe in subsidizing the transaction. We believe that every transaction needs to be unit economic positive. We don't earn money to acquire customers. And because of this kind of beliefs, we are not growing that fast. At least on the surface level, right? Compared to so many different startups at that point of time that practices this growth at all costs. So the make or break moment really comes in 2022, 2023, when there's so much of a FOMO and so much of a self-doubt moments within our internal management team. You look around, you see so many startups, quote unquote, made it. I'll be honest, at some point of time, within our internal discussion, the temptation of going all out is also quite high. Should we just do what they're doing? Should we just burn money to acquire customer? So now looking back after 2022, especially the 2023 tech winter, so some startups survived, some folded. But for us, not only we weathered through the entire 2023 unscathed, we were much stronger fundamentally. Now looking back, we definitely think that we made the right call to stay on course, exercise some kind of a financial prudency while growing at a more moderate pace, right? So had we chose to go down the other path, who knows? You might not be here today. So that's, I think, it's a very important make or break moment for FAZ history.
Yeah, the FOMO is very real, even for startups. And I think it can be a really tough temptation to overcome and really just stick to your own pace of growth. So yeah, on that note, gonna wrap up part one. Hope to see you guys in part two of our conversation, where we're gonna get to know Mark a little bit more as a leader of FAZ. But in the meantime, subscribe to get notifications on the next episode, and we'll see you guys in the next one. Thanks for joining us.